Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tuesday Talk with Dr. Tasha Parker Meredith and Derek Scales Shelton. We have got a lot to cover today. We've got a special guest on the show today, and we've got a special treat for you. We're going to continue our discussion of race relations. But before we go into that, I want to bring on my special guest. We'll bring in our guest today, but I want to bring in my special co-host, Derek, so we can just get a quick update on that debate last night. Derek, how you doing?
Oh, Tasha, I just couldn't wait for us to get on this morning to discuss whatever we're discussing and our guest on the day and the debate. Wow, is this, where do we start? Where do we begin? Just like I told you,
right.
it was going to be, let's get ready to rumble. But anyway,
Go ahead, Tasha. No, I was just going to say, I'm telling you, that debate last night was something else. I want to, before we bring our guests in, we got a treat for you all today, but I want to hear what the listeners thought about the debate last night. So, We're live online, blogtalkradio.com/liveLoveLaugh. You can also dial in 323-642-1299, 323-642-1299. I want to know what people think or thought about the debate. We'll get our special guest up when she comes on. But Derek, so...
I got disconnected, so I called you right back, and here we are. So, yeah, anyway, what were we going to say? What were you saying, Natasha?
I was saying that I did a little survey on my Facebook page last night, and I was asking people after the debate what they rated the debate. And so it was a scale of 1 to 5. And I was asking people what they rated the debate, not who won, but what they rated the debate on overall substance, for example, national security, economy, education, society, and race relations, questions, responses, and the moderator. And I started by saying that I rated the debate a 1. I thought it was very low substance. The moderator did not control the debate at all. And I thought the responses were shallow. And the questions were narrow. There were so many things that they didn't get to, and I know they've got other debates. But interestingly, I got a few people who actually voted. One person said a -5. Now, this was a scale 1 to 5. Someone said a -5. And then the other person who voted just said it was another dog and pony show. And then another person said that it was a 2 out of 1 to 5 because of the TV interest, it was interesting on TV, but other than that, it was pretty shallow. So what would you rate it, Derek?
Oh, I gave it a +10 on stand-up comedy. Hey, it was very entertaining. As we had spoke about before, we were anticipating it coming up a couple segments ago, and we were talking about when it comes up, what's going to happen, and what we should expect, and, we pretty much both hit it on the head and saying, well, this is going to happen, Donald's not going to be able to hold his composure here or there, and And, you know, my take personally on it was that Hillary cut him up, sliced him up, and put him in the garbage disposal all at the same time, you know, because mm-hmm. it was one of those things where Hillary is a seasoned debater. I mean, I think they had mentioned she was a top debater in college and won awards for debating. And, you know, and of course, Donald, on the other hand, you know, he's just not that person who can let somebody tell him things and issues about himself because of his narcissistic sociopath ways. You know, I knew
right.
this was going to happen, you know, and I was kind of in awe and knowing that people are really going to be able to see now, those that are going to allow themselves to be able to see, because there are those people who are not going to let anything sway their idea about voting against Hillary, whether it's because she's a female or whether they feel she's not the person they want in office, you know, for whatever reason. But my whole take on it was very intriguing, you know. I think Hillary really did a good job, and then certain times and instances, like the one time when she said, "Donald, I know you're in your own reality, but, you know," you know, it was good.
Well,
I really enjoyed it. Becky and I both enjoyed it.
You know, it had my blood pressure up, Derek. I was tweeting, or I was on social media the whole night, and I was kind of just talking about what was going on and what was being said, and so it had my blood pressure up. I mean, I had to, like, calm down after my mom and I were texting each other, and I was on Facebook, and I had to calm down after the debate. I was like, they had me riled up. I don't know if I can watch another one.
It was suspenseful, that's for sure.
You know, it was very suspenseful. One of the a couple points I want to make. One of the posts that I saw very late last night on Facebook, someone made a good point. He said that the debates were, I can't remember the word he said. He didn't say interesting, but he said that most people, based on the traffic and tweets and posts on social media, most people went into the debate with their minds made up. So if you were a Hillary supporter, all of your you had a selective listening, maybe. And so if you were a Hillary supporter, then your selective listening was for all the negative things that Donald Trump would say. And conversely, if you were a Donald Trump supporter, you had selective listening to what the negative things that Hillary would say, or you had your mind made up about the emails and the scandals and things. So he made a very good point in saying that the debate really didn't have any substance to sway, you know, someone one way or the other. However, both CNN and Fox News did a survey of undecided voters. And the CNN survey showed that 18 out of 20 undecided voters said that Hillary won the debate last night, and 16 out of 20 won the debate, according to Fox News. So, and this was an audience out of Florida, which is a key state as far as who will win. So I thought that was very interesting. People kind of went into it with their minds made up, but those who didn't have their minds made up, they kind of swayed towards Hillary.
Yeah, well, you know, it tells you a lot when you mention what the Fox poll was. I mean, it was only two full down from that. I mean, and Fox is so much pro Donald Trump and the Republican Party, so to speak, and it makes you think. Well, wow, if they've said that high number, it really must have been an overwhelmingly amount of people who thought that Hillary won. And of course, I think if the poll, one poll on CNN, I think said it was 67 maybe to 65 to 27, Hillary versus
uh-huh.
Trump. It was high.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like not even a close race. But I don't know, Tasha. I think you hit it on the head when you said, you know, and mentioned about how people are not going to be swayed one way or another. If they're pro-Trump or if they're pro-Hillary, they're going to stick to their guns. And you know, the thing is, and even with the surrogates, you know, you listen to the Donald Trump surrogates and people who are in his corner, they just come off so ridiculously in favor and showing their bias towards him. And they say it as just as much as ridiculous stuff that he says. But, you know, that goes to show you, two people looking at the same thing have two different sides and opposites of the way of it being perceived. So that's what that is, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I want to bring our guest in here for this part of the discussion because I'm interested to hear what Meredith McGee, our special guest, has to say about the race relations questions or lack thereof answers last night to the race relation questions. And I thought, Derek, that one of the most interesting things that stood out to me was Donald Trump's response to how do they plan to reduce the killings of African Americans. And his response was law and order. He talked about how African Americans live in hell, and he made a very general statement. Like, I just thought it was very interesting, and I'm going to bring on our special guest here, and I'm going to get your thoughts on that. So, Meredith McGee, welcome to the show. How you doing today?
Oh, just fine. Thanks for having me. I'm doing wonderful.
Awesome.
Good to have you.
Yes, we are so glad to have you. I'm going to give you a chance. Please just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about the debate last night before we get into your book.
Okay. My name is Meredith Coleman McGee. I'm the author of four books. My new book is a children's book. I'm also the publisher of Meredith, et cetera, and we have about a dozen titles on MeredithEtc.com. I'm also the niece of James Meredith, who integrated the University of Mississippi, and that's the title of one of my books, which is a biography and a textbook. And I used to be a community organizer, which is a title that no one knew understood nationally in America until Barack Obama mentioned that he was a community organizer in Chicago. So I'm very interested in community relations and community progress.
That's awesome.
And in terms of the debate last night, when Donald Trump, he showed at first he seemed like he was going to be presidential, and he told Hillary Clinton, I care about what you think. Is it okay to address you as Secretary of State? And then he went off into his ranting and how angry he is. And the thing to me was that, according to all the polls, the two of them are in a dead heat in terms of their support among Americans. So it's like the way the polls are putting it, either one of them could win. And I think that a lot has changed, because 50 years ago, which is what my new book is talking about, telling Nishita about history, we were marching and we wanted to vote. And now Michelle Obama's just mentioned that less than 20% of Millennium college-age blacks vote now. So that is one issue in terms of race. And what he mentioned about searching people is going to destroy relationships. And Hillary Clinton, to me, has the better answer in terms of building relationships. And there are a few things that I think should be that should be eliminated. First of all, I don't think any nonviolent person should be taken all the way to the ground for anything. And I think that we have a lot of judicial, we need training, de-escalation training so desperately, because I've watched that video of Mr. Scott numerous times, and it hurts me so bad because my husband is dark, and I can't imagine what she was feeling when she was pleading with them not to shoot her husband. And then she, even though she, sitting there mortally wounded, they were saying, we need to hold the wound, and trying to handcuff him, even though I know they didn't feel. You could see the expression on one of his face, that he know he didn't feel a puff. But they were still just, it's like, but then we have to go back historically, and we think about, in the 30s, Billie Holiday wrote a song about southern fruit. Southern trees bear a strange fruit, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. So this image to a lot of white police, they're just numb to black males. They devalue them so much that they've been dehumanized so much until that's what they think of, executing them. They just shoot them. They don't even think of sparing them. I just was seeing somewhere recently where a white man was running from the police, and even though he was running, his life was spared by the white police officer. Then of course we had a black police officer recently that killed someone. But I think that there is a difference in terms of the bias, because I live in Jackson, Mississippi. We don't have that problem. This is a predominantly black city. We don't have a problem with our police know how to de-escalate, and they're not. It's not on in their bias to just shoot and kill.
Wow.
That's very interesting. That the being in different areas, how police receive different training. Thank you so much for all of those points. I think you made so many points. And Derek, before I touch on them, Derek, I want to just get your take as a black male. What is your take on everything that has happened and some of the things that Meredith just talked about?
Well, I recall, about 5 or 6, it's hard to remember because we've done so many segments that we had discussed that same issue. As far as to reiterate basically what I had said before is, I feel like I am, of course, a humanitarian at heart, and knowing and my outlook is very much in the way of being diverse and being open to being a part of the society the way we should all feel, and not be divided, and being an upstanding citizen and doing the right thing and helping others rather than hurting others. And it comes down to a thing where all that doesn't even seem to make a difference when you're African-American male, because you're looked at and depicted as a certain image, and people react to you in that way. I hate to feel and think about me being at face value, seeing, oh, here comes this black man, what are we going to get, and that's what hurts me so much, is to not even having a chance to prove and show my trueness as far as being a good person, which I pretty much feel I am, and having a very much of an attitude of God in my life, and going through life with the faith of God. And to being ridiculed and depicted as a potential thug, which I don't carry myself in that way, and don't get me wrong, but just the face value. Even if I was in a tuxedo and dressed in a particular way that totally was against what people might think of me as far as my race, they would still be in an apprehensive state and thinking, well, he's a black man. That's the first thing they think of. So, you know, and I think I recall me mentioning how I felt being stopped in traffic, and knowing, well, you know, I'm going to do everything I can do to keep the situation from potentially being one that I won't be the next statistic. And it's really, you know, my heart race, you know, and you know, you think about what could be an endeavor as far as what this officer might be thinking. You know, even if I do everything right, is he still going to kill me? Is he still going to look for a reason? I mean, is this particular stop that he decided that he's going to make something out of it regardless of what I do? So it's really a really sad situation as being a black man, knowing that there's nothing I can possibly do in many instances that's going to make a difference. And it's just disheartening. It really is.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that, Derek. And thank you, Meredith, for your all the points you made. A couple things.
You.
I know for me, I recently traveled to North Carolina. I traveled to Raleigh when all this was going on. Well, everything is still going on in Charlotte. I was a couple hours away. And for me, I have to admit that, honestly, driving on the freeway, I was a little apprehensive as a black gay female who dresses like a male. Some, you know, my clothes are male. I wear predominantly male clothes. And so for me, honestly, I, you know, now even when I see a police officer or I, you know, if I'm stopped, I get a little nervous. You know, and it's a level of fear that people should not be subjected to. So I can't imagine how the fear that the average black male has in just walking down the street these days. And so, but one of the things that I wanted to hone in on that you mentioned, Meredith, as far as the de-escalation and some of the solutions to some of the problems that we have. It was interesting that Donald Trump didn't mention any of those solutions. His solution was law and order. And that, to me, is just a very controlling manner. I want to know, what do y'all think about what he said about the law and order piece? And then, Meredith, specifically, how do we, say, for example, if he wins, how do we combat that kind of ideology, and how do we educate the community on how to deal with things like that? Because if he has that ideology, you know it's going to trickle down.
Right. And Hillary Clinton said it best, that he will bring back Reaganomics. And I forget the word that she calls it, Trump something. But anyway, it's not going to work. It's going to take us back. And even though the economy in the past 8 years has done, you know, has recovered, it has not covered for people of color, because we still have the highest unemployment rate, and we're still the last hired and the first fired. So we still have the same issues, but the things that Hillary Clinton wanted to do will help our poor communities more. But he wants to implement stop and frisk, which is really illegal because it's racial profiling. It's even in New York, they said that. Giuliani said that was, he gives credit to stop and frisk as something that reduced crime, but the pundits say that crime was already reducing. Stop and frisk, because the laws are so biasly implemented. If there's a roadblock, the roadblocks are in the poor communities. Point blank. And I mean, we can even look at Ferguson. They were racking in a lot of money off of the black community just in fines. Okay, that's when traffic stops and all that, which is illegal. It's been illegal since the 70s. The Supreme Court said it was illegal to jail people who didn't have money. But they're still suing cities and stopping them from doing it, even in my own city, which is last year or earlier this year, was sued because of violating the people's right and implementing debtors' prisons and on the Gulf Coast. See, all of those things economically harm us, and that's one of the greatest harms that we have is the economic harm that comes from the laws.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What do you think, Derek?
Meredith is hitting every point on all the points that you can hit. And, you know, just to piggyback off what she's saying, you know, people are in denial when it comes down to what the real issues are and the truth behind and the civic significance behind a lot of the matters that are going on. You know, especially when it comes down to the racial biasness of things, you know, you can't tell somebody something that they don't want to believe or that they don't want to see. And that's what we're running into is a vast number of whites see things a certain way. And then, of course, a vast number of all races see things in a certain light because of their own ignorances and selfishness of believing what they believe in and being egocentric in a way that their own race is. And we talked about this, Tasha, how every race seems that they're the supreme race. And, you know, your Hispanics may be a certain way towards others. The Italian community might have issues towards another community. And that's what we really got to get away from, you know, and really, really embrace each other regardless of our races. And that's something that's going to take some time and doing and a lot of soul searching to do. And I commend Meredith on hitting those points because, you know, there's so much, you know, that's the stop and frisk thing, you know, and then the economic issue. It's the pits. It just makes you feel like you can't even elaborate on it. You know, it's so ridiculous and so absurd, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Meredith.
Well, honestly, I think that there are just a few things that some of the famous and well-off people in our community could do that will really, really help us economically. Because I think if Black Hollywood or the guys in sports, if they could just pool a few million dollars together and invest in places like Chicago, I mean, there's not even enough hospitals and clinics there. And, you know, Spike Lee named his movie Chi-Raq. I mean, and more people were killed there. I don't care if we got to send the National Guard there. And I don't care how much money. We need to straighten out the stuff right here, the domestic issues. First of all, that many people should not be killed on American soil, and we just keep going on about the business, our daily business. That needs to end. We can't just have people killing each other like that. And then the other thing is that we're not funding public education. And then some of them we got to start letting books be entertaining, because that used to be a part of entertainment. Because, you know, Du Bois said we need a talented 10. We need somebody that uses their intellect. And if the kids are on the tablets all the time, let them at least be learning something that's intellectual, because we need so many intellectuals in our community. You know, we need all kinds of people. We got to at least produce some intellectual children. And it's like everybody wants to have fun. That's what Facebook is. A lot of people just not using it for knowledge. They're using it for entertainment. But we got to channel the entertainment for the children. But we got to really do something that's going to improve the economic situation in all of these urban centers where it is just really, really bad.
Absolutely. I totally agree with both of you. The economic status and economic situation is so very important because, you know, a lot of us in the Black community don't like to talk about the Black-on-Black crime and the levels of crime that happen in comparison to, and there absolutely is no comparison, I'm just making a point here, but in comparison to the violence by and killings by police officers. Crime is crime. It's bad, you know, no matter how it happens. But when you look at when you look at the number of killings, and since we're talking about Chicago, I'm so glad you brought that up, Meredith. When you look at the number of killings that have happened and that continue to happen in the city of Chicago alone, there's so much more to it than just at face value, in my opinion. I know my wife and I were talking about it the other day, and she was talking about how there's guns being taken into the city of Chicago, and it's been proposed that perhaps even the government is involved, and you know, on such higher levels than one could even imagine. And that's why for me, I go back to the point of what Donald Trump said. It just resonated with me, the law and order, because if he really enacts search and frisk and says that law and order is the answer, that is problematic for our country, for Blacks, for Latinos, for Asians, for every race other than whites, in my opinion. And I just think that I just hope and pray that as a society we will wake up and really find creative ways to get the millennium generation to the voting polls in November and to make them understand, to try to communicate how important and how essential this specific election is in history, because, you know, this election could either take us back 50 years or it could help us and keep us moving in the direction that with the progress that President Obama has made. And so what I want to do now is just segue into your book, Meredith, because I think your book, your latest book specifically, can play an important role on history and educating those of us like myself. I don't feel like I know nearly enough about African-American history. So I'm very interested to hear more about your book, what it entails, how it came about, and just share with us what you want the listeners to know and take about your latest work.
Okay, thank you. My first and my latest book, my first children's book is Nishida Visits the Smith Robinson Museum. Nishida in India means student. It's also is an Islamic name. However, Nishida is a Black character, and her name has meaning because her name means student, but she is being raised by two Black parents who are training her to learn about history and culture, and also they have told her that she's going to learn something every day, and they want her to read their culture at home is they read books to her at night. And they also are taking her on field trips to historic places so that she can learn. And the Smith Robinson Museum is the first place that they take her to. The next place is going to be the Mississippi State Capitol, which, like the White House, was built by Black slaves, because we built We knew all the trades. We don't know trades like we used to 150 years ago, 200 years ago, because we were the carpenters, the blacksmiths, we did everything. And this is the Moses Meredith Cultural Arts book series. And Moses Meredith was my grandfather. He was born 125 years ago. He had a fifth grade education. His father, his mother was the daughter of a white lawyer who helped write the 1890 Constitution, which disenfranchised his daughter's race and my race. Mississippi wrote in the literacy tax and poll tax as a way to purge blacks from the voting rolls, and that's still what legislators want to do. They added a new law if you break to the voting rolls, which is carjacking. So anybody that commits carjacking, even if they rehabilitate themselves, they can never vote again. They're purged.
Wow, really?
Mississippi. And then, so my grandfather was, he's to me a very inspirational character in our family, because even though he had a fifth grade education, and my grandmother was his second wife, she had an eighth grade education. In 1935, he had his oldest child, Emmett Meredith, graduated from high school at a time when there were 177,000 illiterate blacks in the state. And my Uncle Leroy Meredith, he graduated, I think, in 1939, maybe 1940. And the next two girls, they obtained teaching certificates from Russ College. And my Aunt Thelma, three of them migrated to Detroit in the early 40s. My Aunt Thelma, once she got her teacher certificate and she started teaching for Otala County, Mississippi, she told me she hated being a teacher in Otala County, Mississippi, in 1940, because her supervisors, which was the white power structure, wanted to make sure that blacks remained dumb, and she couldn't go along with that. And so that's why, to me, reading and understanding, you know, because some of the laws that were created 50 years ago, 100 years ago, they're being rewritten. But if you know the history, you can kind of see that. And I think that's why history is so important, because everything is built on the past, the rules and
sure.
the culture and everything. And so Nishita, when she visits the Smith Robinson Museum, she meets Richard Wright, Fannie Lou Hamer, Negra Evers, and at the time when she went, there was an exhibit on James Meredith there. That's my uncle, and she's introduced to Separate but Equal, which said that it was fair for us to have a separate service. But you know, I think about that because the one house schools, sometimes I interviewed later, she told me that they had one book in the entire school. But it seems that even though their schools were inferior and they had much less than we did, their schooling generated some of the greatest blacks that the world will ever know, you know.
Wow.
Because, and I talked to a lady once who told me that even though she went to this Separate but Equal school system, when they were in the ninth grade, their teachers had them writing essays. And in the city where I live, the public school doesn't have you to write an essay until you were in the 12th grade. So I think that Nishita is 7. That's the great 8. And also her parents taught her how to sign her signature. She says to the readers, my parents taught me how to sign my signature. A signature is important. And in Mississippi, they have taken cursive writing out of the school system. And if parents don't teach their kids at home how to write in cursive, they will not learn it. There's a lot that we have to do at home these days. Because, as Hollis Walker said when I interviewed him, the white power structure will never provide the education that is necessary for us and people of color to compete with their descendants. So that in itself is a powerful point. We must study, as Nishita is studying, to improve our knowledge base and to be able to improve the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, thank you for sharing that, Meredith. I want to make a point. You know, unfortunately, I don't think it's just Mississippi as far as the children not learning cursive anymore. You know, we do a financial literacy class under the Dr. Tasha Meredith Foundation. And I am surprised, or have been in the past, not so much anymore, surprised to learn that when we get to the part about endorsing checks, students don't know how to write in cursive. And
oh, yeah. What age are you dealing with?
9 to 16.
Oh, wow.
9 to 16. And so if they are not taught in school, you know, of course, we teach them the best that we can. It's not a writing class. It's a finance class. But, you know, just think about it. If you don't know how to sign your name and you get a check, how are you going to cash that check? Or how are you going to write a check? And that's something we're not teaching the kids anymore.
And sign a contract for a house, or you know,
or exactly,
you know, so many things, even a car.
Right.
I guess they could probably.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I was just going to hit on that point about you know, back in the day, you didn't have to know anything except to make an X for your name. Remember back in the days where they say, all right, just put an X there, and that's all we need, because that's all they wanted you to do anyway. You know, as far as anything else, as us being able to learn and being in knowledge of being taught to even read, let alone write, you know, keeping people dumb is an advantage to people who are keeping people dumb, you know?
Right,
and
absolutely.
So therefore, you know, as long as you can make an X, here, just put an X there, and that's your signature. That's all that was basically required. So it's not a surprising thing to know that even in today, 2016, that people still hope to hold an advantage and to be able to oppress people who don't know how to read or don't know how to write. And what better way is to not teach them how to do these things, you know?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so we have.
Go ahead, Meredith.
And I wanted to say that we have 3 children books at MeredithEtc.com, and one of them was written by my great niece, who was born in Atlanta, and she was living in Florida when she wrote the book Saving the Manatees. She started a Saving the Manatees Club. And she and my niece illustrated the book. So that brought 3 generations. My mother and father are authors, and I'm an author. And then my niece, that makes 3 generations. When I tell people that, they said that is absolutely amazing because it's rare. And the other thing that I discovered after I wrote this book, Dorothy Stewart, who is the founder of Women for Progress, which is a social group here in the state, and also Women for Progress Radio. According to her research, less than 3% of children books are written by black authors, and less than 8% of children books include a black character. The Sheeta is
wow.
a black character. Book was written by a black author, and I had no idea that I was doing something that was rare. And I think that, you know, we really need to take a look at that, because if the books that the kids are reading do not give them heroes and sheroes that look like them, then it perpetuates institutionalized racism and the inferiority
Absolutely.
Complex, which was the reason why the points that was argued in the Brown case, you know, because
mm-hmm.
he had the kids to pick out the black doll and the white doll and to see which one they thought was the best, and even the black, and all the black kids picked out the blue-eyed doll because institutionalized racism said to them that the white doll was best, smarter, prettier, and all of that. So we still need to, even the white kids need to read this so that they can see that there are people of color who are great. Richard Wright, Megan Evers, because our stories need to be told to America, because our stories, the black experience, is an American experience. You know, like everything is always separated. Black History Month, we have the African American Museum. That's an American museum, because everything that happened in there happened in America, and it should be not seen as just black American. It's American, because we are Americans. We built this country, so our stories should be incorporated into the textbooks. And of course, they might not want to do it, so we got to do it. The parents, it's on
Absolutely.
Us. We got to teach ours about us, and hope
Absolutely.
that the school system will teach everybody about us.
Absolutely, we gotta take the initiative. I totally agree with you, Meredith. So where can I know you mentioned your book is online. Where can if someone wants to purchase it, where can they purchase it? And is it available in ebook and hard copy or just
yes?
Hard copy?
It's available in hardback through Barnes and Noble, and it's available on my website. It's a ebook in Kindle, and it's an ebook in Nook, and it's also a paperback book. And I'm also the author of Odyssey, which is poetry, the collection of my writings, James Meredith Warrior and the America That Created Him, which is a textbook biography, Marriage to Sin, I'm the co-author, that's a memoir, and it has been translated into Spanish, Casada L. Picada, which means Married to Sin in Spanish. And my mother's book, My Brother J. Boy, is available there. And my father's book, Tata, Time After Time of Hell, which is a religious book, Saving the Manatees. And it's all at Meredith, MEREDITH, etc., etc.com, com. And my phone number
awesome.
Is 601-372-0229. A lot of different history, and one book was written by a white author about prescription drugs, opioids, addiction, and losing his brother to opioids. My brother, Bob.
Wow. That's a big deal these days. Absolutely.
Yes, it is. Last week was opioid and the prescription drug awareness week, designated by the president, because his administration has try to do a lot to address this issue. It's not
uh-huh.
a black and white issue or a rich issue. It's an American issue, because a lot of people are dying because of prescription drugs.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think enough attention is being paid to it. It's an epidemic. It's absolutely an epidemic going on.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Well, Meredith, we have enjoyed having you on the show today.
Definitely.
Oh, I've
definitely.
Enjoyed being on. This has been a very rich and interesting conversation.
And
that's absolutely.
Every week we try to do it. That's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, we try to just talk about current issues and relevant issues. And, you know, it was very timely that we had you on as far as the debate last night and the whole race relations discussion and your book, Nishita. So we wish you much success in your book. We are praying for bestsellers on all of your
Oh,
work.
Well, thank
and,
you.
you're welcome. And we just appreciate having you on the show, and we look forward to having you on the show again soon.
Okay, I look forward to being there. And if you can, I'd like for you to give me the link so that I could share with other people the discussion that we had today.
I sure will. I will post it right after the broadcast.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And we can
okay,
always tag you in there. With,
yeah,
with,
okay,
I was just going to say,
Tasha,
how we tag her. We'll tag her so she'll be able to pick up on it and then share it. And that's the way we do. That's how we roll.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate
you
both.
You have a fantastic day. We appreciate you as well.
Take care.
Okay, thanks.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Wow.
How knowledgeable
a lot of information
wow.
there.
Well, and so focused in delivering it is, I'm just so in awe about the things that she expressed and let us know. I mean, Tasha, we're you know, even though we're co-hosts of the show, we are also students and listeners as well. And what a fabulous segment once again that we've had with just a very intriguing guest who just. Really, as I used to say back in the day, put some fat on our heads about some stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
And, that's what we need, you know. We need people that we can to come on and help us deliver what we try to do in this world and making it a better way. And Meredith definitely really expounded on that as well.
Absolutely. You know, I really enjoyed this show. It was very educational for me personally, Derek. And I've just really enjoyed the show. Is you know the debate, the debates last night were somewhat discouraging, to be quite honest. It you know I was sitting. I remember my mom was here. Last year, and it was right at the onset of the, you know, presidential process. And I remember my mom saying, there is no way the Republicans are going to let Donald Trump become the nominee. And so to listen to him and to see Donald Trump be on that stage with a former Secretary of State is just amazing. I can't believe it. You know what I'm saying? I'm amazed, and I'm still waiting for what's his name? The guy that used to do the show Punk, Aaron. What was his name? Kushner or whatever? Oh gosh,
I'm not for sure who you're talking about. On what show was that again?
Oh, Punk.
Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. I'm still waiting. I was waiting for Ashton Kutcher to come out last night and say, I got you, America. But, yeah, no, it never did happen.
Well, you think about President Clinton. He found out that Donald better not say nothing bad about Hillary or me, and so I'll be up there and I'll be on his throat and be choking him down. I just don't believe he's the kind of guy that would do it, and he just better keep in his place.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. But anyway, I digress. We are so happy to all of our callers and listeners who joined us today. Next week, Derek, I have no doubt that we will have plenty to talk about again. Once again, our time has expired. Derek, can you believe how fast it went today?
Yeah, you know, you get wrapped up in it if you're not sitting there looking at a clock. that you no way possible think that the time has gone by as it has. You know, I mean, it just never ceases to amaze me, Tasha, how the time does pass due to the fact that we are hitting on these subjects and we're having the guests call in. And just like last week when we had Pam call in and we discussed that, it went by fast. And it's just something that you have to take into account, that the reason why it's going fast is because we're covering issues and the meat of it and stuff is just the epitome of why they go by so fast. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the reason why.
Absolutely, absolutely. And next week when we talk, Derek, I want to continue this this discussion of race relations. And we did not get to talk about the shootings this week, but I want to talk about that a little bit next week. And just, you know, we'll see where we are on that. And then, of course, the following week we'll have plenty to talk about again, because the next debate is, I believe, on October 9th. So we will continue that discussion. And with that said, you got any closing words, Derek, for our listeners?
I was just going to say, just to piggyback on your point, you know, how last week the shooting in Charlotte hadn't happened yet. You know, we were talking about the one in Tulsa, and then we had made the comment about how, you know, that something's going to happen right as we speak that we're going to be able to talk about, because right this moment something else is going to be coming up. And then we mentioned about how the fact that the police shooting in Tulsa entailed the white officer said, well, you know, now we got black officers killing blacks. It doesn't matter. And lo and behold, the officer in Charlotte was a black man. And we had just spoke about that prior to that happening. But anyway, just to say, you know, the closing thoughts, you know, we see right before our eyes so much going on that it tugs at our heart. And there's nothing that we think we can do about it, but we can. We can take it into our own initiative to be that person, to make a difference for you and your family, for sure, your children. And then that hopefully will branch out and it be kind of like one of those multi-level schemes where you touch a heart, that person touches the heart. That person will touch and it'll go like wildfire, and that's what we have to be.
Absolutely.
In the way of thinking. Just pass on the goodness of your life and world to others, and hopefully they can pass it on as well.
Absolutely. Pass on and spread and share the love. Pay the love forward, huh, Derek?
That's what I'm saying. You got to do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, my awesome co-host, Derek. We appreciate you. I love you, and I'm just so happy that you joined us today. Everybody, our callers and our listeners, thank you for dialing in. Thank you. If you want to listen online next week, you can. Please feel free. It's blogtalkradio.com/live, love, laugh, or you can dial in 323-642-1299. Have a wonderful, prosperous, and positive week. God bless you all.
Attention.